Nicholas?
Okay, I'm Nicholas Lopez. I'm a producer and also the co-writer of the movie.
Hi, I'm Ana de Armas and I play Bill.
Hi, I'm Keanu Reeves and I play Evan Weber.
I'm Eli Roth, the director.
I'm Narenza Iso and I play Genesis.
I'm Colin Camp, I'm the producer and I have a little cameo in the movie.
I'm Aaron Burns and I play Lewis.
Great, first question right here.
Eli, I'm a huge fan of your work, man.
Thank you.
Let me ask, because in this movie you dismembered heart. How is that more affecting than you dismembering bodies in the previous movie?
I'm glad you picked up on that. You know, in my other films, they're certainly known for the viscera and the gore, and this we substituted the chopping off Aaron's head in Green Inferno for sawing off the heads of the statues. And in a crazy way, I found it more disturbing. My mother is an artist, and we grew up with her artwork all over the house, and it was very careful. You know, you don't want to bump into a painting, you don't want to scratch anything. But we found some amazing, amazing artists in Chile to create this work. And I remember even when we were shooting it with the girls, there was an element. You know, when you're doing a kill scene in a movie, you really want to get it right and make it look great. But when they were really destroying the art, I mean, obviously everyone were in character and we went for it. But there is a feeling like, oh my God, we're really destroying these objects. But then, of course, they spray paint. Art does not exist, which is the very question of what is art. Is it the object that's artistic or the value you place on it? Because I know my films, to one person, they can be complete garbage. To another person, they're a work of art. So what is art?
Angela, you had a question?
Mine is actually for Nicholas and I guess Eli. Can you talk a little bit about kind of the premise of this? Because to me, it seems like it's a cautionary tale, and I want every husband and boyfriend relationship to watch this movie. But you know, can you talk a little bit about, you know, just really how it is like a cautionary tale? Or, I mean, do you even see it that way? How do you put this in perspective in terms of, you know, just don't fool around? What do you think of that?
Well, I would say that, I mean, for sure it's a cautionary tale, but it's also, in a way, I think it's about the way, when there's problems in a relationship, if you don't deal with it, it's probably going to come out in your behavior one way or another. You know, and seemingly on the surface, Evan has a very happy life, but you can see there's a little frustration. The wife's not having sex, and he uses the monster voice. It's almost like he never directly addresses the problems in the relationship. She goes, I'm sorry, you know, she gets really mad. I was like, sorry, sorry, sorry. And then it's Father's Day, and they still leave him, and the house is her artwork everywhere, and it's all about her and the catalog and everything. Even though he's still there, it's still make sure the mover's this. It's like he's kind of just managing the house. So there are frustrations. You could almost make the argument the girls were created from this part of his id that just wanted to destroy whatever life happened. But Nicholas and we talked about the free pizza.
Yeah, no, I think that what's interesting is that the movie doesn't judge Emma the whole time. You know, I think that basically, it's like what would happen to any guy in that situation, and we talk a lot about that with Eli. You know, it's like, because one thing is when you go the extra mile and you're like texting to another girl and you actually do the whole process of like cheating, and here it's like what happened if that suddenly is in your door, you know, and it's like the whole like free pizza rant that Keanu has in the middle of the movie has to do with that. You were free pizza, like you suddenly appear there, like somebody knocked on your door and offered you free pizza. You know, you're gonna have it. You know, so that's the thing. The problem is the free pizza.
Question on the end?
Questions for Keanu. Speaking of the free pizza rant, how many takes did you have to do with the free pizza rant? Because it seemed like something you have to get worked up for.
Yeah, it was a really exciting moment to do that scene. We shot it twice, because the first time, I guess I wasn't up for the task. And then we got to play the scene we got to learn something from that. And then I got back to the hotel and I was crying and I called Eli and I said, please, can I do the scene again? And then Eli was just like, there was a long pause on the phone. And being the great person and director that he is, he went, okay. So we could shoot it again.
I mean, he was hugging me while he was crying. It wasn't on the phone. No, he was there. It was shooting nights. It was very difficult on all the cast. You know, we're having lunch at 2:30 in the morning. And I just want to say what an honor it was to work with everyone, right down to Aaron and Colleen, Lorenza, Keanu, Anna, and Ignacia. They were such troopers. But, you know, there was a point where it hit 6 in the morning, and he literally had no voice and was out of gas. And we're like, this is your moment. We say, like, this is your Oscar clip. We got to be, you know, like, this is that moment where he finally breaks and voices what the audience is thinking. Like, well, how the fuck did this happen? It's total helplessness. And so I remember we came in fresh the next day, and it was just beautiful to watch.
Is it me?
my question for actors, the Keanu and Vincent and Anna. So the Keanu, this is from my readers. Do you like to be in victim role, and was it exciting? And Anna and Lorenzo, it's really nice to seduce De Niro.
Yes.
What was the first part?
If you like being a victim.
You like being a victim.
Oh, the victim is fun in movies. You know, Eli created a great situation of trust, and Lorenza and Anna and I, we had such love for the material, and you know, we rehearsed in the house for like a week, and we really got to kind of know each other and know our perspectives on the roles and really what were the limits and where was the fun, because the films, you know, there's a seduction, yes, what does that look like, and then there's also comedy, there's thriller, and there's, you know, some really emotional scenes, and it was great to get a chance to work together and to flesh the project out, and with such great material that, you know, I think we all had fun doing that.
Yeah.
So much fun.
Yeah. Oh yeah, seducing Neo.
He was going through such a hard time in real life because we were picking at him and whispering things and touching him, and by the way, Eli says action, Keanu was already red and you know, we drove him crazy. It was fun.
I completely agree. It was I think when we first heard it was Keanu Reeves, I was a little bit nervous, and it was like, oh my God, that's gonna be Neo in my country. What? And he showed up, and he was just the chillest, most amazing, available actor I've ever worked with. I learned from him every single day, and with Anna and Keanu, we had an amazing, amazing time. At least I did. I learned so much from both of them, and you know, it was just fun destroying this guy.
Question back here.
Yes. Hi, Colleen. I was curious. First of all, I followed your career, as you know, through Jeffrey Lewis, who we lost at the beginning of the year.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And she has
an amazing
body of work. A couple things. What attracted you to this project, and also what attracted you to work alongside Jeffrey as well? You both had this insane IMDb list.
Jeffrey was an amazing actor, and I was very fortunate to work with him in a Michael Ritchie movie called Smile, which was in 1975, and he just was a brilliant actor. And then ironically, later he worked with Sandra Locke in some Clint Eastwood films. And Jeffrey was just he was a very big fan of a movie that Knock Knock was inspired by, actually, which was a movie called Death Game with Sandra Locke, Seymour Cassell, and I. And it was a film that Eli was actually inspired by, and when he saw the film, and actually when Lorenzo saw the film, they were very excited about it because they were looking at a lot of movies in that era. And that's
so hot.
And I think I was very fortunate to just work with a lot of really interesting directors, particularly in the 70s and 80s and, you know, 90s. And so Jeffrey was just one of those extraordinary actors, and he's brilliant in that film, Smile. And I loved him, and it's very sad that we lost him this year.
He loved you.
Thank you so much. That means everything to me. He was amazing. Amazing.
Rich.
Yeah, this is for Eli concerning the two ladies. their characters were so strong that in my mind, I would like to see more of them. In other words, another
yes!
film.
baby.
They paid me and the check cleared.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that they had indicated that they'd done this before. Mm-hmm. They did it to him, and it seemed like they're going to do it again.
Oh, yeah.
It would be so great if they knocked on the wrong door.
Well, we talked about doing a movie called Who's There? And that would be that, you know. And there was also, we actually shot a tag where he like found them in another house, and they've switched characters and they're doing it to someone else. And in the movie, in watching the editing, I thought, you know, the movie, like, there's nothing worse when he's just looking at the, you know, he likes the photo. Like, that was the end of the film. It felt like we were starting another movie. So we certainly talked about it. I love the characters, and I really cannot say enough amazing things about Anna and Lorenza. You know, we really, really wanted them to have real depth and be real characters, not caricatures, or not just psychopaths. You know, we offer a little bit of a hint into what abuse they've faced in their past, which they had no choice in. And they're feeling that everything is bullshit, that all of this, that all men are basically animals, that if you bring them off them the free pizza, it doesn't matter if they have the ring on their finger, the kids in private school, the photos in the wall, if you show up with the free pizza, they're going to take it, because that's what men are. And all this art, it's all bullshit. It's just masturbatory nonsense, which is how I feel about some, you know, sometimes during Academy season, maybe we feel that way. Sometimes. But, you know, but truthfully, the reason to do it would be to work with both of them again, because I think that what makes the movie work is the dynamic of the three actors and the way that they work so well. And in fact, you know, when we met Anna, it was Colleen had met her and found her, was like, I just met the most amazing girl, you've got to meet her. And Anna was like, going to get on a flight later. And Lorenz and I went and sat down with her, and Anna didn't even audition. We just knew that she'd be amazing. And just every, what I love about them is that I got to work with the cast, and even, you know, Aaron, who's very, very different from his performance in Green Inferno, everybody's making the most of every single moment in the movie, you know? And then, like, that moment where Aaron's like, bitch, I'm from Oakland. Like, it's like, the audience loves it, but it's like, but, like, the whole scene when...
You work at the wrong time.
When Anna comes in and she's looking around, or the extra beat, and Keanu holding his uncomfortable smile and gulping a few times, it just... It was such a pleasure to work with the cast. As a director, you really all have to do is set up the camera and yell action and cut.
Question right here.
So who's scarier, Scorpion Woman or a cannibal? And actually, my question is for the actors. When you were reading it, what did you think about the behavior of the women? I mean, have you known someone like that? And I just want to say, somebody after the screening said to me, women are crazy.
Well, I think actually we all have that crazy
inside. I agree.
So I don't know. I think... We got these two roles, and I think they both have a lot of layers, and we go from giggling like little girls to the crazy psychos. So it was, I don't know, I thought it was fun, and we were like, Eli said once, like two cats playing with the mouse in the middle, and it was, I don't know.
Yeah, totally. I mean, when you read a script like this, a story that is so intricate and with such insanely rich, intense backstories, or you know, as an actress, when you get this conflict of, you know, of a traumatized past, and then doing this to men, and sort of what's the motivation, is how far does it go, where is the limit? I think it's awesome to get to do that, and to just, it's kind of liberating to get to completely go with that inner crazy. And I didn't personally base it on anyone. I just let my inner crazy go.
Jenny, what did you think when you read the script? Women's behavior.
Oh,
you recognize it?
When I think of their behavior, I thought they were really smart. I thought
of
they
course.
Were really smart.
Of course we are.
Yeah. I think because of the context of that they had done it before. You know, and then what roles were they deciding to play with each other? And what were they deciding to represent themselves as? Mm-hmm. And then how that had nothing to do with who they really were. But it was who they were and are, because they're choosing to play those roles. But so I thought it was just really smart and funny and emotional. Because there's also behind the whole thing what's true and not true. Mm. And the
you're
only
so
thing
much
that's
better
really
at answering.
True is that we had that night.
Yeah.
And we talk about the next morning, how, you know, and again, in confronting a relationship. And again, I would also stress that Colleen's performance in Death Game is so masterful. It's one of those things, if that movie had come out today and people saw her, she would be that it girl that everyone was talking about. And Sandra Locke as well. But definitely worth revisiting if you haven't seen it. But, you know, we talk about that, you know, the morning after when he walks in and sees them and they're like two raccoons that have gotten in the kitchen. There's just food everywhere. That if he had come out and said, Jesus, I can't believe I did that, but in a crazy way, it was like a weird wake-up call. There's real issues in my marriage and I'm going to talk to my wife. Can I make you guys breakfast? They probably wouldn't have done that. But the first thing he says is, I thought you guys left. Like, he wanted them gone. Like, they're like toilet paper. He wants them flushed away. He wants to clean. He literally goes and, like, wants to clean the house of everything. And that's when, as soon as he comes in, and the first thing is, we thought you guys left, it's like, okay, game on. So everything, what's scary to me is that, you know, look, the cannibal, it's like the woman said, like, you get you in the shark's backyard, you're going to get ate. Like, you jump in the cannibal's house, they're going to eat you. The cannibal's the cannibal. Like, that's they're going to eat you. That's what they do. But what's scary is when you bring it upon yourself. You know, Keanu invites, it's like they say, you have to invite the vampire into your house. It's Keanu that, it's every step of the way, it's his decision. And it's his actions that have the direct consequence for their actions.
I have a question right here.
Questions for Eli and then for Keanu. Eli, coming from a gorgeous Amazonian, you know, picture out in the middle of nowhere, how is it making a chamber drama, if you will, with Knock Knock? And Keanu, I consider you a veteran, if you may. Do you get more amped up sharing scenes with beautiful, gorgeous, newcoming actors such as Lorenzo and Anna, as opposed to Pacino's and...
Well, obviously, we shot, you know, Green Inferno farther than anyone has taken a film crew before, and I know that, like, for Aaron, for his sequence, and Lorenzo, even just getting to the set was survival. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
it was about an hour and a half each way, just in boat, and then you were another 2 hours in car every day just to get the set.
And your death scene, it was about 5 hours you were under that rock for probably...
It was a fiberglass rock in the middle of the jungle, and...
He suffered in this one, too.
They set it down, like, 2 weeks prior, and they filled it with ants. It was filled with ants just because when they opened it up, they didn't realize it was filled with Isula ants, which are, like, these inch-long bullet ants that if they bite you, they say it hurts more than a gunshot. And so we kind of... tried to take as many hours as we could. We had to get shooting because we only had about 5 hours to shoot every day before it started getting too dark because there's no electricity or anything. So they put me in a trash bag, taped it up, and I was stuck in there for 5 hours.
And here, all you had to do was lie there while we paper mache'd you.
Yeah, it was awesome.
But you know, shooting in that glass, we found this beautiful location, which was like a glass box, but that presented its own challenges. You know, everywhere there was a reflection. But shooting the nights was really tricky because that after. Lunch is at 2 in the morning, and at 3 a.m. you feel the exhaustion. And I remember doing the game show scene. You know, Lorenzo, one scene you're screaming in the Amazon River, another one you had to have that energy for the game show host. That was tough.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complete different world. It's so hard to, you can't compare Green Inferno to Knock Knock because they're completely different movies. I mean, not even opposite. You can't even make them opposites. But, you know, I think Knock Knock had its own challenges. I think it was completely on our shoulders as actors to tell the story. We couldn't rely on the beautiful Amazon. We had a beautiful house, of course, and a beautiful set production and a wonderful camera crew and an amazing DP who made us more beautiful. But there was a definite pressure of really bringing these characters to life and making them real. And I think, again, it wouldn't have worked without the brilliance of my acting partners. It's no way, you know.
Question
so.
Right here.
Oh, wait. You didn't get to...
Do you prefer Pacino's?
Pacino, De Niro, or Anna Lorenzo?
No, they're so opposite. I mean, an example would be like Green Inferno. You can't even compare them. But they do have something in common, which is, you know... in any of that, whether it's, you know... I mean, with Pacino, it's so extraordinary because I looked up to him... as an actor, and so to get to act as one of your heroes is very special. That being said, you know, working with Pacino has the same thing of working with Anna and Lorenzo, in that you're there to tell the story, and everything of who you are and your craft and your creativity goes into that. So that's cool. and also just jumping into this film with Anna and Lorenzo, it's just it was just great to me. Everybody just loved the project, and we enjoyed each other's company, and it was fun.
Yeah. Right here,
For Keanu and for Eli. Keanu, when you were offered this project, did you ever have any trepidation about working with someone who has such a hardcore reputation for these horror films? And for Eli, how was it for you to put Keanu through the motions? I mean, was he always the first choice? I mean, what were you thinking when you guys were mapping this character out in terms of actors?
Yeah, I don't think I was the first choice for the role. but I'm really glad it came my way. And when I heard that Eli Roth was interested in me for a role, I was really excited about that idea. In terms of, you know, the films that he had done in the past, that was, if anything, made it more cool, you know. You know, I think in terms of his art and what he's doing and what's in that is really interesting and entertaining. And, you know, so I was really excited about reading the script, and then reading the script just was so fantastic. And then hearing Eli's, when he communicated his vision for the piece, I was really excited about that. And everything that I had hoped and thought of and what Eli spoke about in terms of his hopes and ambitions for the project have been realized. And so it doesn't happen all the time that you go into something and then you're watching it on the screen and you're like, thank you. That it works out. You know, so it's cool.
No, Keanu, actually, it was Miguel Asensio, who's Nicolas's partner in Sobras, read the script and said, this has to be Keanu. And I just think none of us thought it was realistic.
Possible.
It wasn't that we didn't.
So you were the first choice, like from the beginning.
From the first draft of the script. And it's weird how you do that.
He's gonna come to Chile. Come on.
And then he's gonna come to Chile. Yeah. So, and then it was actually, you know, it's funny, Colleen. That's why I love Colleen. She's such a pitbull producer. You know, she's like. We were actually, Nicolas and I rented the house, and we put down like a $50,000 down payment of our own money. Just, we call it a faith-based system. Like, we just assume we have faith the movie's going to get made. We're going, okay, we wrote the script in December, and in January we put down the deposit. We said, okay, we have 10 weeks to get the movie financed and prepped and shooting. Go. And we're like, literally, this family's moving out for a month, and we have paid them money. So I go to Colleen, and she's like, why'd you rent the house? I was like, feel it. It's the clock. So there we were. And it was like the Oscars of 2014. And Colleen's like, we need to get started. We got to get started. What are we going to do? So Colleen's like badgered Paramount because she was, or with David O. Russell from American Hustle. She bothered like Paramount. She got favors. She got us 2 tickets to the Oscars. Me and Colleen went. And we just went around like looking for money and our star at the Oscars, okay? And she's like, come on, John Travolta's getting us into the Vanity Fair party, we're going. And like, and I swear to God, we like bulldozed our way into the Oscars, bulldozed our way around the parties, and like we were David O. Russell, so it was fine. And they're like, well, no, we're David, we can get in, right? Like, yeah. And they're like, what are you talking about? You guys don't take it. Like, David, can you get us in? And it happened, and we got in and we saw Cassie and Elwes. And he's like, what are you doing? And I was like, actually, we need money for a script. He's like, can you send it to me? And I did it from my phone. He goes, I'll read it tonight. I was like, okay. He called me the next morning at like 9:30. And he's like, it's fucking amazing. When you guys need to start, I go, we need to start prep in 10 days. He goes, Eli, are you fucking crazy? And he's like, but I've done 2 movies with Keanu Reeves. I was like, can you get it to me? He's like, let me call him. He's like, Keanu actually has a window of 6 weeks. I was like, I just need him for 4 weeks. And we wound up getting it to Keanu, and then Keanu like came in a week before. I remember being in Chile, a week and a half before, as we were already like about to shoot. We just had Lorenza, no money, no cast, and it all fucking came. It's one of those miracles.
It was incredible.
It all fucking came together at the last minute, but it was totally Colleen just like bunching her way, like the Kool-Aid man, just like, rah, like breaking through into the Oscars, getting Cassie in. And I remember Lorenza looking at me going, all right, yeah, I'm never going to argue. Because Lorenza was like, you guys are insane. Like, what are you doing? Like, we're not shooting. I love you. I want to shoot it, but I don't think this is going to happen, Eli. And we're like, we're doing it. She's like, yeah, wow, that worked. I can't believe it.
One funny thing in the story, because I was going to the Oscars with David, and then Eli and I kind of barged in, and that's when we met Cassie. But the post-mortem to this is the next day, the day after the Oscars, after Cassian said, yes, I want to do the movie, David O. Russell comes over to the office with you in their meeting, and we announced to him that Knock Knock is being made on Skype for the first time. His eyes were like saucers, and that's the other funny part of the story. But it did actually just happen that quickly and that fast.
And my first Skype with Keanu is like, there's no question. He's just, I mean, honestly, there's no accident he's been a movie star since the 80s. Like, he's so, so good. And I was proud that this was the first movie where he played a dad. You know, I think we are seeing the Keanu sense now, where it's, you come from John, where he's like the daddy's so nice and so vulnerable, and with the kids, he's fantastic.
Question here?
Yeah, Keanu and Eli. Keanu, why did you take on this role? And also, is it relatable to be around two crazy women? And Eli, were there any obstacles during the directing of the film?
It's a great role. I liked the running of the piece, the different tones that the film has, the comedy, the suspense, the thriller, the seduction. There's all of these really interesting chapters in it. And then for the character, I really liked that, the family guy, the husband, the architect, everything's perfect, but is it? And then I liked how he never changes. Like, he's unapologetic to the very end, even as it all comes crashing down on him. I liked his kind of like his obstinance to his righteousness. The movie doesn't have that. The movie's kind of impartial, but he's put under a magnifying glass, and I think there are certain ways to look at the project that what is being looked at, as earlier as Eli has spoken about. There's so many layers to the piece, and it was fun to be an archaeologist and to dig them up and to play them.
Any obstacles during?
Well, the main obstacle in shooting was the time constraint. Our whole idea was doing it down and dirty and fast and doing it, trying to shoot it in like 22 days or 24 days, which is crazy. It was like it's the kind of thing where there were so many more scenes where it's just like, Jesus, we have an hour and a half to shoot this, really? This
heavy
is, it's like heavy, heavy dialogue and intense. And sometimes, look, Canon was great. We shot on the 1DC. I think it looks beautiful, but you were in a tight space sometimes. You just couldn't move the camera. One of the actors were constricted. But, we really got in there and rehearsed, and everybody had their game face on. But, once we added water and glass and light, the reflections were a nightmare. But it was worth it, the struggle of the movie, of getting it there, everyone pushing themselves. We all were crazy by the end of the movie. Because in the movie you're going crazy. There was one obstacle where the woman who owned the house, who's an interior decorator, showed up the day we had the destruction, even though
I was hiding
told her
in the
that
bathroom.
Was really bad. Aaron saw that.
I actually saw her pull up, and I run inside, and I'm like, guys. I run the production. I was like, guys, make sure she does not come in here.
Stall her.
And she just comes ripping through her own house. She sees all this destruction, and she almost fainted. Like, it was impressive. And then she walks in the backyard, and she sees just these statues destroyed all over her lawn that she's cared for all these years. Like,
the hole.
She's just like distraught.
The hole.
And basically, when they set those statues, the red statues in the back, they set them on the grass, and basically that grass underneath just died completely.
Yeah.
So we had to resod the whole backyard. And get it back up to.
We did. The house looked nice by the end of it after we left.
Yeah, it was perfect.
That was a big obstacle.
Now, this was in Chile?
Yeah, in Chile, outside Santiago, which is where Nicolas is a production company. It's one of our Chile Wood productions.
A question back here.
Chile Wood?
Just what were the keys for you in shooting this movie in a visually arresting style within such an enclosed space, kind of a la Polanski and Hitchcock?
Yeah, well, I watched, Adrian Lyne, Fatal Attraction. I watched how Peter Traynor shot Death Game with Jack Fisk production design. We watched Roman Polanski's Death and the Maiden. Beautiful, beautiful looking film. We tried to find movies that were contained and confined, that didn't feel claustrophobic, that you weren't trapped. I remember in Cabin Fever, I always, even if it was a cabin, always depth, window, light. And we found the location, and there's so many different layers. And I like the house being a character. I like the house being a metaphor for the marriage and the different levels, the different layers, the facades, the things you destroy underneath, and the U-shape of it, the way the house was laid out. We could really... Green Inferno starts off looking like Spider-Man or You've Got Mail, and then it becomes this disturbing documentary where everything's handheld, shaky, and out of focus. This had to have that stylish look from start to finish. And I wanted to show that I could do those Hitchcockian, early Paul Verhoeven, Turkish Delights, The Fourth Man, that Jan de Bont photography that he had. I love those movies that look beautiful and feel rich and lush, where you can really give the actors a great frame. And that's our DP Antonio Corcia, our production designer, Richie Palacios, costume designer, Elisa Ormazabal. They're like in my amazing, amazing team that you get the actors that are so into it. I like setting up the frame where you can just really make it about them and their performance. But if you're watching, there's always different layers going on deep, deep, deep in the background, and really just filling the frame with that detail.
Question back here.
Hi, Eli. Your movies seem to push the boundary of what humans are capable of in that way. Can you talk about what this movie means in terms of getting into the psychology side of horror instead of just the dismemberment, things like that? But what is it in terms of getting inside the psyche that is it more scary? Do you find, can you scare yourself even more that way sometimes?
You know, it's interesting. I think that at this point in my career, there's no way to divorce myself from horror. I can only transition and make different types of movies because I'm so strongly associated with it. So the hope is that people watch it as its own contained film, not necessarily as like the fifth chapter in some sort of long form horror series. Because to me, this really is it's a drama, it's a thriller, it's a sexual thriller. I think that if you put it in the category of horror, it kind of gives the audience the wrong experience. And I'm not criticizing that. I completely understand why people would think that. You know, I don't want people to think it's a horror movie with no blood. It really, truly doesn't follow. It really follows the conventions of that sexual thriller. But for me, it was fun to get into the psychology of those characters, to write them from the point of view that nobody's wrong and everyone fully believes in what they're doing. And that's always scary to me. You know, when someone does something because they so truly believe what they're doing, there's either a larger cause for it, or they believe they're right, or they justify it in their own head. And that's what I think is interesting and dangerous and exciting. It's that the idea that Keanu's character, Evan, doesn't think he knows it's wrong, but he's justified it in his head. And the girls know what they're doing is wrong, but they've justified it in their head. What happens when those two worlds meet? And then Nicholas and I looked at social media, and we looked at the way, I mean, look at the Ashley Madison hack. It's, you know, again, 37 million people paying to cheat on their spouses because something is, and I'm not judging them, I'm saying there's something broken in their relationship. There's something that they're missing. So instead of confronting it, they pay money. And now with technology, it's all their credit card, email, and all their sexual fantasies are detailed on the internet forever. And that's the world we live in. And we talk
social media is very scary right now. Like the whole thing about that somebody can destroy your life just by sharing one picture on Facebook. And can destroy everything, you know, that's something that didn't happen 10 years ago, or even 5 years ago.
And even this morning, someone was saying, oh, there's a new Yelp for people, where people can rate you, and there's no way to change it.
What?
So, yeah, I heard that like four people. Like, so, you know,
that's
if,
awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's because you have an awesome rating.
Oh, because
rating.
You're not, no, shut up.
So,
but that's
awful.
It's horrible. I know, but it's
the Yelp for people. Yeah,
yeah.
We're
also looking at kind of everyone's
also Uber. You know, like everything that has to do with the fact like the girls are waiting just because suddenly the Uber that they order is going to take more time than what it usually takes. You know, so that like those little things. I think that what the movie has, and that's something that I really like, is that the movie takes place nowadays, and that technology is part of our lives. And basically using that also as a way of telling a story, you know, like using Facebook, using, you know, because what happens to me in most of the movies that I see is that most of them, they don't seem to be happening like in this time and age. You know, there are many movies where you're like, oh, why he doesn't like get on his cell phone and do this and that or whatever. Now we have so many tools that when you write a script, basically those tools, they can destroy any logic of a script, you know. So we were like, why would we use them in advantage of the story? So that's what we try to do.
Ben, you had a question?
Yeah. Eli, your past movies, be it Cabin Fever, Hostel 2, or The Green Inferno, have had characters journeying to like the far reaches of the earth for new experiences. But this one's different in that it takes place at a man's home, which ends up getting invaded through his own fault. Did that make it challenging? Did that present any new challenges for you as a writer?
No, I mean, I like the idea. Obviously, I was very interested, kind of probably from where I grew up in Newton, Massachusetts, of that kind of over-sheltered, over-privileged, over-educated, kind of upper-middle-class kid that yearns for that life experience. And Cabin Fever, they want irresponsible partying and drinking and drugs. Hostel, they want sex they think they can't find. And in Green Inferno, they want validation through this kind of vanity activism. They want Twitter followers and all. Goes horribly, you know, it all comes back to bite them in the ass, literally, in Green Inferno. But with this one, you know, it is about, you know, now that I'm 43 and we're making a home, it is about what happens when you let that force into your life, that you suddenly look around and you're like, oh my God, there's a crazy person in my house, what have I done? And you realize that because you're smart, that's actually what makes you vulnerable. You think, well, I know how to handle this situation because I'm a smart person and look how well I've done so far. And you drop your guard, and then maybe there's some situation that someone's in your home for whatever reason, you realize, oh my God, this person could like take my stuff. This thing, they know my alarm codes. Like they could really unravel me, and you can do it in such a short amount of time. And then like Nicholas and I said, you know, add the social media aspect. We also were interested in the generational difference in sexuality and how someone in their 40s, a lot of my friends married in their 20s are now divorced. And they'd say, God, what's it like? Our girls in their teens and 20s, they must be so much crazier because of internet pornography. There's this grass is always greener mentality. And looking at the way teenagers sexualize themselves on Instagram for likes and follows, you know, we were looking at, I think, some people in the cast and crew, their younger sisters are 15 or 16, and looking at their friends, you can't tell in your 40s. I'm like, I wouldn't know if that girl was 16 or 26. So playing on that, on the difference in the sexuality and generation and how that all... Now nothing is private anymore, you know, that idea. So when we were writing it, we just thought about all of the things, the sort of modern fears. You know, cabin fever was when I wrote it when I was 22. I wrote Hostel when I was 32. I wrote, you know, the Knock Knock when I was 42. So they're all very much written about, or 41. They're very much written reflecting the fears at that age.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Nicholas, you're from Chile. And I, of course, after we did the interviews for Green Inferno just a week or two ago, there was the big earthquake in Chile, and I'm just hoping everybody is okay. Is everyone all right? Your crew and everything else?
Everybody's alive.
Okay, and also the production crew on this as well, because I mean, filming in Chile. Is everyone okay?
Yeah. I was there. I just got here from Santiago. I was there for that earthquake, and it was nothing like the 2010 earthquake, which was much more vertical and things falling down. This one was a lot more kind of circular, and all the buildings just kind of swayed with it. And
also, Santiago architecturally is very prepared for earthquakes.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm Chilean too. That's why I know that.
Question right here.
So during the seduction scene, it's always awkward anyway. But on top of that, you guys are a couple. So was that awkward for you guys?
Well, Keanu and I weren't a couple at the time, so we were pretty open, and it was. It wasn't weird at all. No, I mean, look, we obviously want the scene to be great. And, you know, I think that the scene would have been awkward with different scene partners. You know, obviously, they're such great actors, and everyone is friends and close, and we all want it to look good. And we all watched the scene, and there was a point where we watched it, shot it, cut it, and it showed, we watched it with the cast, and everyone's like, the sex scene could have been better. And we went back, and we shot inserts of body parts of photo doubles. And it turned out awesome. And I was like, oh, that's how I'll do it in the future. I'll, like, totally no shame in that. Like, it actually wound up being great. But, you know, we were all there to make a great scene. But, yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, I mean.
One last question back here.
Question for Anna and Lorenza. What were some kind of maybe advice or lessons you learned from sharing scenes with Keanu? Was there any, like, tips on improv or something like that?
I don't think he's aware, but at least for me, we were talking about it earlier today in this interviews too, I think he's a brilliant, brilliant actor, and this is besides him as a wonderful human being in person. I'm going to quote you, Keanu, working with one of your heroes is something special. That definitely happened to me. And his whole persona, the way he comes into set, the way he deals with crew, the way he deals with actors, he's very prepared and vulnerable, and every day you learn everything from him. There's no bad things to say about Keanu. There was one moment where he actually did help me. I'm fairly new to this, and there was a scene where I'm like putting the fork in him, and he's like, ah, and like it wasn't working, and Keanu goes, Lorenzo, look up, don't look at me. I'm like, oh, okay. I was so in the scene that I was looking at him and not at the mark. So that was a sweet moment.
Oh, me.
Just
I'm in
no.
love with Keanu.
Yeah.
No, I think Keanu, you know, what is impressive is his attitude and his you know, the way he shows respect and he's so giving and generous and patient and such a great partner that he just wants you to shine, and he's just helping your performance and you to just go up and be better and greater, and it's true. And you know, we all had expectations about what's
how's it going to be when he comes here? What,
yeah.
How's he going to be? What are we going to do? I have to rape him. I have to push him in the face. I have to throw my panties on his mouth, whatever. What's going to be that? And it's just, you know, it was so good. So good and so easy and so... And the movie works because it's him, maybe another actor, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, for sure. No, I want him to get nominated. That's my dream. I want this to be that turning point. People go, oh my God, he's really, wow, we've never seen that. That, you know, everyone loves him as the action star, but it is no accident he's been the star of this many movies and worked with the level of directors that he has. And I'm just honored to be a part of that. And really honored to have worked with everybody from Aaron, Colleen, Lorenza, Anna, Nicholas, and... It was a very, very special experience.
Thank you so much.